Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
And today we have a really fun episode. You guys are going to really laugh through a lot of it. Carrie Leiser, who is a co-executive producer of Will and Grace, creator and executive producer of The New Adventures of Old Christine, and a new show coming on called Call Your Mother with Kira Sedgwick. She has a lot of hats, as we always say a lot of women do. But she also wrote a book called Aren't You Forgetting Someone? Essays from My Midlife Revenge, which is a hysterical book, very quick, very light reading. You'll be spending so much time going, oh my God, that's me. Oh my God, that's me.
And look, she's spying on me. She sees
what's happening. Even if it wasn't you, you could relate to why these stories were in the book. They're short story, kind of short paragraphs of experience she had in the start of raising three kids because she has twins and a younger son. And then kind of as they get older, leaving the house to go to college and what her life was like going through divorce. And then kind of her career, she started as an actress. I guess I should have said that from the beginning. She's an actress, producer, writer, and kind of creating her professional career along with the chaos of raising three kids. But Bridget has one story that I think stood out to her.
It did. But her book, it's just, you know, the way she tells the story. It's also on audiobooks too. And just the way she does it. But one story, I couldn't believe it because she was starting out as a young actress and the show Growing Pains was on and she, you know, gets a part on it, or not, you know, gets to have a little part on it, a guest part on it. And she goes on the show, she's only 20 years old, and Alan Thicke hits on her, but she doesn't realize it at first. So you'll have to read the book to hear how it all works out. Because if you are a young actress, and first of all, if you even get on a show like that, is a very big deal. Even if it's a minor part, it is a very big deal that you have to audition for that part and probably do callbacks and everything and get back on and to get that part on that show. And yeah, I just couldn't believe it because she kind of hits on that just a little bit in the book. Being a woman in this career and having to fight through things in this career. But I was just so angry when I read that.
Right. And it's just a creepy way he tricked her to his house. And
It's just the whole thing. Yeah, she thinks she's going to have lunch and see this.
In her naive 20-year-old.
But that's just such a power play because he was the star of the show. And she's just a guest. And then how the other stars would side-eyed her and just kind of wouldn't, you know, talk
right.
to her.
And then, she comes back.
And she didn't do anything. But they think this anyway. So, and then he was a total jerk to her when she wasn't going to play along with his plan.
Right. And it's interesting because fast forward 30 years and how she would have handled that now
would
have been very different. And she tells the stories of being the only female in a writing group of men for a lot of shows. But, you know, as she got more powerful, her voice got stronger, which I think for a lot of women, we can relate to that. And she talks about one of her children coming back and what that was like in the dating world for a second. She was single since, I think she was married for 9 years and then she was single for a lot of it. And it's just, it's a take, you know, I love the review Julie Louis-Dreyfus left for her. Carrie Leiser writes about being the child of parents, being the parent of children, and being a middle-aged adult with brutal honesty, a tender heart, and a wicked sense of humor. And that really does describe the book, you know?
Yes.
And so we're going to let her tell the story because we had a great conversation with her. We hope you enjoy it. And we will talk to you right after. Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics. Today, we have a really cool guest on. Her name is Carrie Leiser. And she just recently wrote a book called Are You Forgetting Someone? Essays from My Midlife Revenge. Carrie is, and we said in the beginning, she's an actress. She was co-executive producer of Will and Grace. She was the creator of The New Adventures of the Old Christine. And you have another show that we'll talk about. But welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We're excited to have the conversation. Yes. I have to admit, I read your book in like one day because it's so funny. It's so relatable. What made you call it Essays from My Midlife Revenge? Why did you think of it as a revenge?
I guess it came off as a little mad. I don't
a little bit. Just
a touch mad. I thought I was being lighthearted and funny. And then I wrote it in a writer's group that I'm in with a variety of people. The woman who runs the group is named Claudette Sutherland, and she's 81. And there's men in there and women in there. And some of the people responded like, "Ooh, I guess you have a little anger in you." And I thought, "What did that? Was that mad?" And I didn't feel it at all. I really, I just had to sort of roll with it and I guess get it off my chest.
Were there any other women in there our age? Because as a woman, we're all about
of a certain stage.
Yes, primetime life is what we had a guest call it, and I love that. Were there any other women? Because as a woman, the same age as you, I was like, yeah, I hear where you're coming from. So I didn't even feel the anger. I felt more like the, yeah, okay, I get it.
It was an interesting sort of focus group opportunity because there were women my age. And then, like I said, there were men and then there were young women and young men in there. And so everybody that was listening to it sort of hooked in from a different place. Like the young guys that were in the group were like, I feel terrible. I think I better call my mother. You know, what did I do when I went away to college? I didn't even think about what she must have been going through. So it was an interesting experiment to workshop it sort of around that kind of diverse group of people. It was interesting. But yeah, there were women there that.
Okay.
That
were you at that point actively writing in Hollywood, or was it, did the kids come first or did the career come first?
The career came first. I was writing when I had my kids. Fortunately, I had transitioned from acting to writing. So, which was fortunate because I think being an actress and trying to have kids, be pregnant, be fat, be breastfeed, all of those things, I think is much more challenging than it was. It was challenging, but I think less so than if I was an actor. So I had just started my writing career when I got pregnant with the twins, but it worked out well in that I could go to work pregnant. I did work on a staff of all men and all young men. So they sort of really got a window into their future that they probably didn't want as I waddled into work every day and grew before their eyes and then came back to work with my breast pump and stored my breast milk in the communal refrigerator. And so it was an experience for all of us. But yeah, I worked throughout. I think I took not very much time off, maybe 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that with the twins. Mm-hmm. Went right back. And they came with me, especially my youngest son, because I was running a show at that point when he was born. And so I had a little bit more leverage. I had a little bit more power at that point. And so I was able to bring him to work with me, and which was, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. How did that opportunity come about that you were able to get your own show?
It was a little fast. And I think I'm lucky that after that first opportunity that I got another opportunity because I really wasn't experienced enough to have my own show. But I had this very firecracker agent who I was pregnant with my third child. And he said, they want you to write a pilot. And I'd been writing, I think, for 2 years or something, not very long, not long enough to write a pilot. He said, I've got 2-year-old twins. I'm pregnant. I don't think I'm up for this. And he said, just write a pilot. You'll pocket the money. Nothing will happen. Everybody writes a pilot and it doesn't go anywhere. You'll be fine. So I write the pilot and somebody bought it. And I was like, oh God, come on. And he said, it's okay. So by this time my youngest is born. He said, so you'll make the pilot. Now I've got 3 kids under the age of 3. He said, so you'll make the pilot. It'll be like putting on a play. Nothing will happen with it. It'll be a lot of fun. You'll make a little more money. It'll go away. And then you can just have your kids. Then I get diagnosed with thyroid cancer during all of this while the kids are little. I make the pilot. CBS picks it up and puts it on the fall schedule. Now I'm sort of undergoing treatment for thyroid cancer. I have 3 kids under 3. I say to my agent, Scott, what have you done to me? I can't do it. I can't. He said, you can do it. You'll have a lot of help. It's great. It's an opportunity. He just didn't bat an eyelash, of course, because he wasn't doing it and he didn't have any of this going on. So it all sort of, it was like a firestorm of craziness. Great opportunity, but it was really bad timing, as it turned out. And so The show went on the air. I'm dragging, you know, thyroid. If you're going to get cancer, mm-hmm. that's sort of the kind to get. And I went through the treatment. I had my kids. I'm dragging my infant to work with me and breastfeeding on breaks. And the twins are doing what they're doing and coming to work when they can. And it was a bit of a mess, honestly. I didn't have the brain cells. There was too much going on. I held it together. I did okay. We got through one season. But honestly, I couldn't find my voice. I didn't really know how to do it. I hadn't come up through the ranks. So I didn't know the process, and I was sort of flying by the seat of my pants, and I didn't really even know what my job was. So I was listening to everybody's opinion. I thought I had to take everybody's opinion. I thought that that's what my job was. And so I lost my way in a little bit. And so I think I'm very lucky that I got another opportunity after that to learn properly and do it the right way and sort of take a step back and have a restart a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Were you probably in about your 30s when all this happened? I was curious because I can remember, I'm relating because in my 30s, I felt like everything was a blur. And it seems like, as you get a little bit older, just the experience that comes with it and the learning and your kids get a little older.
Yeah.
And you get to sit back for a little bit.
In my early 30s,
When this happened, I was curious about that just because that seems really, it doesn't matter what line of work you're in. I hear so many women talk about that. Just in that crazy,
it's kind of a blur.
It's a blur.
A total blur. Like there are people that were with me during that experience that come up to me and, you know, tell me stories or say, remember this? And I truly, it's like amnesia. I have no, I have no recollection of the people, the process, the thing that, you know, it's very strange, but it was too much. It was just too much. My plate was too full. And like I said, they were glorious opportunities that a lot of people don't get even once in their life. And so I really do feel grateful that, that I didn't burn bridges.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely.
When the opportunity to be co-executive producer of Will and Grace came around, that was a little bit later, right? A couple years later?
Mm-hmm. A couple years after that.
What was it like writing for Will and Grace? Because it is one of my all-time favorite shows, I'll tell you right now. I mean, honestly, between your book, I felt like, okay, she's talking to me. And then Will and Grace, I was like, oh, I can't wait to talk to Kat. But what was it like writing for the show?
It was an absolute blast. It really, you know, it was restorative for me after that experience where it wasn't fun. And it really was where I sort of learned what a functional television show looked like, because it was so well run. There were so many great people on that show that's really where I sort of went to school about how to, mostly the most important thing I learned was, and I think the thing that Will and Grace exemplifies is somebody telling an authentic story, like somebody knowing who they are and telling their story and not letting anybody mess with it, not letting the network or well-meaning whatever, executives coming in there and sort of trying to monkey with your story. But Max Muchnick in particular, one of the creators, and David Cohan's the other creator, but Max Muchnick, it was his story of he being a gay young man and having a woman best friend growing up and how that informed his life and his growing up and his coming into his own. And so when you have, and what I learned from that is when you have a voice and you stay true to it and stay true to telling your story, it works. Mm-hmm. And that's what I didn't do before. And so that's what I took away from Will and Grace. And beyond that, just the experience, it was the funniest group of people to say that I've ever been around. I mean, just if you can imagine, I mean, you can't imagine because you do it, but to go into work and just laugh all day long. It also, because it was a big success, we were treated so well, you know, just a bunch of baby comedy writers in there. They feed us and we just get to sort of toddle around and tell jokes and then go to stage and watch these brilliant actors do their thing and just laugh all day long. And it's glorious. You know, it's a great job. And those people are very dear to me. You know, it was just a great weird, interesting people. Just, I mean, oddballs, every one of them. And I love them dearly. It was a really, it was quite an experience.
It was such a groundbreaking show because I can't quite remember because I was in my 30s probably when it started and everything's a blur, but when it started, but it was so groundbreaking because it was one of the first, not the first, because there were other shows that had gay main characters in it. But it really was one of the first groundbreaking, kind of just brought normalcy to us, to everyday life situations for so many people. I felt like that. Did you guys get any, was there backlash? Was there things like that when it began, or how did that go?
I mean, the great thing about it was that it was always about being funny. Mm-hmm. You know, it was never about wagging your finger at anybody. It was never about teaching anybody a lesson or anything. It was just about being funny, being lovable, talking about friendship and love and being important to people. And it always had such heart. And so, yes, there were, you know, I don't remember the specifics either because it's all a blur to me too. But, you know, there were whatever the groups were that came at us for sure. But even in those moments, as a writer's room, we would respond to them. We would craft letters in response to the hate mail that we got that were funny.
Comedic responses.
Dear sir, I hear what you're saying, and I think you sound attractive as well. I think, you know, I mean, we just, there was just no moment where we could take any of it seriously because it was all about staying happy and humorous and where the show lived. And because of that, there was a buoyancy to it. And there wasn't ever, I don't think anybody really let the hate come in, which was, I think you could feel it. Mm-hmm. I think you could feel it on that show, which was great. And, you know, being on the floor of that show because it was taped in front of a live audience, the people that would come from far and wide to come watch that show and what it meant to them. It was like, not quite, but a little bit, it was like, you know, people that came to see like the Beatles or something, you saw that it you know, that it moved people, that it had changed people. These, you know, young men, a lot of times where they had saw themselves for the first time on television, and they saw their story or they saw their best friend or they saw, you know, I think it opened up conversations for people to talk to their parents. I think it did a lot of that kind of thing. I think it did sort of change things in a way, but in a way that made it funny and light and not, I don't know.
Just not condemning. Yeah.
I think there was no shame in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes a long way. Yeah. I think it did a lot. I'm proud that I was.
Yeah. You definitely, never felt like a message was being crammed down your throat during the show.
No.
It was really just a half hour to just laugh. And it was written with such intelligence and wit that I think a lot of the shows, if I remember, that were coming out during that time were almost talking down in a way to people. Mm-hmm. And this just appreciated the intellect and the humor of life without talking down or trying to preach a message.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's
I think it brought up a lot of people along in that way. And I think it was so smart. You know, I didn't come on till season 3, so it was already going along, you know, so I can admire it as much as anybody else. It's not my doing. But I think it's so smart. I know people, you know, I live in Vermont part of the time in a very rural, very isolated part of Vermont. And the man who takes care of my place when I'm not there is this old Yankee guy. You know what I mean? He's just about as far away from a Will and Grace fan as you can imagine. And he tells me that he watches every time it comes on TV, he watches it, you know, on a daily basis, and it cracks him up and he loves it. And that's the kind of thing where it's like, nobody is telling him what to think. Nobody is, like you said, talking down to him. And in that way, it's just sort of bringing a different perspective into his life without, you know, without telling him he was wrong before or wrong. And I think it's smart. And I think they did a great service and a great thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were you still working on Will and Grace when the opportunity to create your own show came about with The New Adventures of Old Christine?
No, I left. I felt like I had done what I could do there. I was sort of itching to write something new. So I left my friends at Will and Grace and went over to, I made a deal with Warner Brothers to create new things of my own. And so that's when I did New Adventures of Old Christine.
It was great. It worked. You know, the pieces came together. I wrote the script independently of casting. I just wrote it. It was just an idea that was, you know, not autobiographical, but pieces of it were. You know, I had gone through a divorce, and it was sort of my fantasy of what I wish my my relationship with my ex-husband was. It wasn't, you know, we don't have a terrible relationship, but it wasn't. But my fantasy was that there was still family, that there would still be a family there. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of wrote it based on that idea. And then the opportunity came to sit down with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and see if we connected. And I said, yeah. And I knew her from Seinfeld, like everybody else. And I said, I don't really see her as a mother. You know, I love her, obviously.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I really, you know, obviously I think she's the funniest person alive, but she seems a little, you know, she's a little brittle. She's Elaine. She doesn't seem to have ovaries to me. I don't know, but... But yeah, you know, I'll sit down with her. I'd love to meet her. So we went to breakfast, and it was just a love connection. I mean, it was like a great date. We stayed there for hours and laughed and laughed and laughed and had the greatest time. And she is as warm and wonderful and delightful as you can imagine. And we talked about our kids the entire time and how much we love grocery shopping and how it's the only time we get away from everything and can like just stroll down the aisle and how peaceful it is. And she is so maternal, so warm, so, mm-hmm. so everything that I wanted her to be and that I didn't know if she was. And so it was a great surprise, but also a real perfect fit and a dream for me. I mean, I couldn't have scored more than that. So mm-hmm. it was great.
Oh, and I really liked that show a lot. I really did. I loved how she just called her New Christine. New Christine. Yes, I thought really that was a great one.
I wanted to follow up with the John Edwards section of the book. Because yeah. I actually went to see him one time, and I'm a big fan. So the fact that you got a personal, I'm so jealous. So unfortunately, it was around the time where your sister passed away.
Yeah.
And you, which is so creative, you decide you're going to get him on the show so that you can have a reading, which is so clever and so smart. How did that go?
Well, I really have to give credit. Joni Marchenko was the executive producer of Will and Grace at the time, and a great, very dear friend of mine. And my sister was dying. My sister had a brain tumor, and which is very slow and terrible way for anybody to die. And so Joni was wonderful throughout that whole experience. And so I became hooked on John Edwards during that time. I would just watch him every night and sort of wait for my sister to send me a sign after she passed away. And I would tell Joni about it, and she had lost her brother to suicide. And she was very empathetic and said, oh, I'm sure she'll send you a sign through John Edwards. I'm sure that's going to happen. So then one night, John started talking about a Will and Grace episode. He was to the audience and talking about the episode where Grace's water bra starts leaking. And I jumped out of bed like, this is it. This is my sign. Why would he be talking about Will and Grace? Not talking to me, because nobody in the audience was responding to it on the TV show. I was like, this is my sign. It's my sister. I go to work the next day. I tell Joni, this is it. My sister was talking to John Edwards. And she said, we have to call him. So she called. He was booked up for years in advance. The show was booked. There was no way. But Joni is, I probably would have let it drop, honestly. But Joni said, oh no, this is going to happen. And she called the production office and in her official capacity, from Will and Grace, and said, we want to use him as a guest star on the show. Could he please call us back? And within 5 minutes, he called. and she chatted him up, and he said, well, I'll be in Los Angeles in a few weeks. I'll call you when I'm there. And then I'm thinking, we can't. So now we're scamming him. And I'm thinking, you know, he has all the power of the other world
on his side and what are we going to do? And this seems wrong. So I didn't expect to hear from him. And how are we going to translate this into a reading for me from my sister? And are we actually going to put him on the show? What's going to happen? But he called when he was there. Joni somehow sweet talked him. She calls me and says, he's had a cancellation of schedule. Get over the hill right now. He's in West Hollywood in his hotel. He'll see you. So I went over there. And anyway, he ended up talking to me for hours. He is the kindest, dearest, gentlest man. And we talked about all sorts of things. Joni was on the roof waiting for me by the pool at the hotel. At one point, he brought her brother through because he's saying all these things that I didn't know what he was talking about. He was it sort of went off track because I was sort of understanding what he was saying to me and sort of getting all the stuff. And then suddenly he started saying things. I said, I don't know what that is. I'm not sure. I don't know what you're saying. And then he said something. I said, I think that's Joni's brother. He said, wait, she's upstairs. And I run upstairs to the pool. Hey, Joni, your brother's here. And she runs back and she runs down back into the room. And she through John talking to her brother a little bit. And then he's gone. And then my sister's back. And then she goes back up to the pool. I mean, it was the craziest, strangest, sort of most comforting, odd thing that happened. It's hard to explain. People say, well, maybe he looked you up. Maybe he knew who you were. But they weren't things like, oh, your sister lived on this street and you live on this street. They were strange little things like he knew the name of my kid's 4-month-old hamster that was buried in our backyard. He knew, weird, strange, they weren't big things that he told me, that he talked about. They were small, personal little details. And for whatever it was worth, they were strange little comforting things. And I will say this, and I say this in the book, and if John ever read it or heard about it, I would hope that this isn't an insult to him. It's going to sound insulting, but I mean it as only a compliment. He is this sort of, he was a ballroom dancer. I think he and his wife, I think that's how they met. He is this sort of buff, tan, Long Island guy, sweet as can be. And I'm going to say not a rocket scientist. You know what I mean? I don't think he is the guy that could pull off this, what would be an extraordinarily elaborate scam against humanity.
Right.
For hours on end. He would have to do some kind of crazy research. I don't even know how he would do it, first of all, mm-hmm. to pull this off if it were a complete hoax and a sham. I don't buy it. I don't mm-hmm. think this... That is this man that I met, this sort of gentle, sweet, lovely, regular dude that I met. Who he was. You know what I mean? That really is uh-huh. who he was. And then on top of that, to sort of compound it, a few years later, so I never saw him again. I never talked to him again. We did use him on
Will and Grace. He was on the show, right?
We used him on Will and Grace, which was hilarious. And then I never saw him again. I never talked to him again. We didn't maintain contact or anything. It was a nice thing that happened in sort of this weird moment in time. A few years later, my brother died. He of heart failure, meth addiction, very sad. And I got this call out of the blue. And he said, and it was John Edward. And he said, I'm sorry. I hope this isn't strange or intrusive. I keep hearing your name. I keep hearing your name, hearing your name, hearing your name. And I'm just calling. I didn't even know if there was still your number to see if you're okay. And it was, I think 3 years later. And I said, I'm not okay. Actually, my brother just died. And he said, well, I keep hearing your name and I keep hearing, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I just thought I would reach out to you and check on you. And he said, I'm going to be in Los Angeles. Can I come see you? And again, he came out. He came to see me at Warner Brothers. He sat with me for a couple of hours. He brought his funny friend with him from, I think, also Long Island. I don't know, these two guys, they weren't like meet stars at Warner Brothers. But I mean, just cute, again, regular guys. But his compassion and his kindness and his humanity were just extraordinary. And not fooling around. Like, it was a comfort to me. And he was amazing.
So you were on the show, you did the show for 5 years and then you were done. And at the point where that show had finished, were the kids getting ready to go to college at that point?
The kids were getting ready to go to college. Yeah, that was right when it was. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus's kids were a couple years ahead of mine. And I remember her husband, Brad Hall, said to me, whatever you think it's going to be, it's 1,000 times worse.
Exactly.
And I was like, no, don't say that to me. That's terrible. Because they were, because he was really, I think he was knocked off his feet by it. You know, they weren't expecting it either. And Andy Ackerman, who directed all of the episodes of Old Christine, same thing. He had, I want to say 4 kids, but it might even be 5. And so, and he was a little bit ahead of me on the road too. But I was a little even more freaked out because they both had partners. Like Andy was in a, you know, very long-term marriage. You know, they'd been with this person since college, and Brad and Julia have been together since they were 20 years old. And I thought, well, if they're struggling and it's that hard for them, what's going to happen to me? I'm all by myself. They're leaving me alone. So it felt like an oncoming train. I was just bracing myself. So the show was coming to an end. The kids were about to leave. And I decided at that point, it's like, oh, well, maybe this is a perfect opportunity to take a break from working so hard and parenting so hard. So when my third child left for college, I decided to basically take a break from writing and doing things. So I took a hiatus from everything, which was a terrible idea. because I suddenly had no structure and nothing to do and nowhere to go. I somehow imagined it as like freedom and, oh, I can, you know, chart my own path. I can travel. I don't know what I thought I was going to, I don't really know what I was thinking. I did spend 6 months or so in Vermont and go down. My oldest son was in Boston playing his senior year of soccer. So I did get to see his soccer season in college. So that was fun. That was nice. But beyond that, I really had nothing to do. I had 2 years of just sort of like haunting my own house, you know, just wandering around. Like, what was I thinking? Because I didn't have an office to go to. I didn't have, and without structure, I don't get a lot done. Like I'm a person who needs deadlines. I need somebody holding my feet to the fire or nothing happens. I was just collecting animals, like rescuing, you know, more chickens added, more dogs added. You know, I'd look around and be like, this, something is really got to happen here. Or my kids would come home for holidays and my daughter Annabelle would look around and just be like, Mom, it's getting scary around here, you know, because I have 4 dogs now and just everything barks when you come into the house. It's craziness, you know. So it wasn't my greatest plan to sort of stop work when the kids left. I should have probably doubled down on the work when that happened. I did write the book. So I did, you know, that something came out of it, but it was, I really needed a little bit more purpose and a little bit more structure. I would give that advice to somebody if their kids were leaving to sort of keep some structure to your days.
I had a friend of mine who was a couple of years ahead of me, and she gave me very sage advice when she said, have something to look forward to. Yeah. Even if it's tiny.
Yeah.
Have something to look forward to. Don't spend all of your time focused on getting the kids ready that you don't think about the day after.
Yeah. I think that's very good advice. And I didn't, because it is, you know, I thought about those parents, particularly, and it's dads too, but it was a lot of moms who they had a different day to day than I did in school. But those moms whose day was filled up with, they were the room parents and the ones at school that spent their days at high school that were whatever their title was. And I thought, what is going to happen when that kid goes off? Because truly their actual job was defined by their kid. You know, I thought at least I can, if I want to, sort of go out and fill my day up with these things. But I thought it's going to feel like they've been pushed off a cliff.
And it's hard. Yeah.
I can only imagine. I wondered and thought, like, what happens and do they prepare themselves after that? Because there was so much energy and so much time and thought, and that was their purpose, their day to day. So, but mine too. I mean, you know, to a lesser extent.
One of the last chapters that you write in your book is the I've Done Enough chapter, where you talk about how maybe you've done enough and it's time for you to release some of that and relax, and that it's okay to do that once you get in the mindset. And then you sign up with Sony TV. What was it? I want to make sure. Sony Pictures TV for a new pilot. How did it go from taking it easy to I'm going to get a new pilot?
I'm not really cut out for not doing anything. It doesn't, my brain doesn't serve me well this time when I let it go idle. You know, it gets me into trouble, honestly. Like I said, deadlines are good for me. Assignments are good for me. So the opportunity came about for me to develop new television. The time seemed right. I'd taken enough time off. I still had yet to sort of really crack the story of this time of life that we're talking about, and really tell that story of the woman who in her 50s and it felt underrepresented on television. I hadn't felt like I'd done it properly yet. And so I still wanted to tell that story, and it's not quite the empty nest story. It's called Call Your Mother, and Kira Sedgwick is starring in it, and it's on ABC. We got picked up, and so we're shooting it now in this weird COVID world. We're shooting it here in Los Angeles with masks and plastic shields, and the writers can't come to the set with me, and it's all very dystopian, and I'm getting tested 4 times a week. And I mean, it's all sort of the enemy of comedy in some ways, but it's also, it's a very strange experience. But we also are on a stage making a show and making comedy. And the show is really about this sort of idea. It's sort of the next step after the empty nest. And this idea that once your kids do leave the house, that these kids in their 20s, my kids and a lot of friends' kids I know, that it's a really hard time, these 20s, when they feel like they're supposed to know who they are and what they're supposed to be doing. I think it's much harder than teens. At least when you're in your teens, your life has structure and you know, you do know what you're supposed to be doing. You have a job, you're going to school, you're prepping for college or whatever is going to come after high school, job, you know, whatever your road is. But you know where you're supposed to go every day and what you're supposed to do. It's all sort of laid out for you. When you're in your 20s, I think it's just, especially these days, you have no idea what you're supposed to be doing with yourself. You look around, you look on social media, and it looks like everybody else is doing better than you are. And I think it's really difficult. I think it's a really difficult time in life. And similarly, I think for those of us in our 50s, we're not mothers anymore. We are, but we're not mothering the same way that we were, and or fathering, depending. But and so we don't know who we are or who we're supposed to be. And so I think it's sort of an existential crisis in a similar way for those people in their 20s and those of us in our 50s, that we're both trying to figure out who we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to do now. And so that similarity of those two sort of coming of age moments struck me. And so that's sort of what it's about, where Kira plays this woman who sort of, she's in Iowa, her kids are both in Los Angeles, and she sort of wakes up and it's like, what's happening? Like, I've done all the work of raising these kids and now they're just done with me. And what am I supposed to do now? And so she moves to Los Angeles to be closer to her kids and is sort of figuring out what her adult relationship is supposed to be with them and what she's supposed to do with herself now, sort of figure out what her life is now at this age. And while her kids are figuring out who they are too, and they're doing it in proximity to each other. So it just felt like there were stories to tell there, and it felt like a good thing to do. And I got this great cast. These young people that are in the cast are just, each one is more interesting and unusual and funny and quirky than the next. They're all people that you haven't seen before on television, which is exciting to me. And so, yeah, it felt like the right time to do it and the right story to tell for right now.
I think there are a lot of women now coming out with second act, second chapter, next journey shows, that because there's such an audience of our demographic, 45 to 65, maybe 70, that would appreciate the TV talking to us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Kind of relating, being relatable. So I think it's a great idea. And I think it's, I mean, I can't wait to watch it. Is it coming up next season?
It's a mid-season for ABC, so we don't have an air date yet, but my best guess is probably January.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we're excited, and we will make sure to share it as soon as it comes out, because we would be so excited. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. We really appreciate it, Carrie. Yeah. And we want all of our listeners to get Aren't You Forgetting Someone book, because it's really funny. It's a great It's a great read. It's very funny, and you'll just laugh through 90%. It has poignant moments too, but you're going to really enjoy it. So thank you for your time. We appreciate it, and have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Well, we want to thank Carrie so much for being on our show. It was just a great talk with her, and it's so refreshing to read a book about from someone else that is about our age, about what we're going through, and with the humor that she uses in the book. And I just cannot wait to watch her new sitcom coming out.
Call Your Mother.
I'm just really excited about it. I'm so glad to see sitcoms coming out that are focusing on women in their primetime life. Exactly. And yes, so just, you're going to have to check it out. Make sure you get her book. We will have all the information in our show notes, how to find the book. You can probably get it at any bookseller or tell them to order it for you if they don't have it. And I recommend it. It's a quick, funny read, and we need some funny right now.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. So thank you again, Carrie, for being a great guest on the show. Guys, make sure to subscribe on any of the podcast platforms, because we're just taking the show up a notch, and you don't want to miss a single week.
Yeah.
Make sure to email us if you have any questions or comments, hotflashescooltopics@gmail.com. Check out our website and our Facebook group and all those other fun things. And have a great week. We will talk to you next time.
Bye.